Welcome to our special segment, Pioneer Pulse, with Jacqueline
and Chaya, where we check the vitals of life and birth in rural America.
So what do you carry in your birth bag?
That's a good question. I carry a lot of
putting herbs. You on the spot.
I carry some tinctures. So I have like motherwort and shepherd's purse and like blue cohosh, something else. I never have to use them, which is nice. I mean, most of the time you don't. The shepherd's purse is probably what I've used the most, but
you don't use motherwort regularly?
I haven't used it regularly. But I'd carry it, but I haven't used it regularly. Do you use it regularly?
Yeah, that's one of my go-to staples. Just because I mean, even in my own births or postpartum time, I think for myself, it is in my initial tea that I drink. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as a tincture. In with a tea of raspberry leaf and cinnamon, and
that's a nice blend.
Yeah, and for my postpartum, I like to have it like at least every morning for the first like week or so.
Mm-hmm.
But immediately postpartum, that's what I have given my mamas just because. Yeah. Or I don't. Okay. Side note. I'm so hesitant to be like my mom's, my mother's, mm-hmm. my mama's or whatever, because like it's like weirdly possessive, and I feel like I'll say my friends, you know, like because mm-hmm. they're my friends, but these aren't my mom's. Like, I don't know, it just feels weird. But
you're
I wasn't sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, clients, families. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yeah, sorry. Just like, I don't. Sometimes I'll do that. I'll be like, don't say this. And my mouth is like, this word. Like, I said, don't say it. But anyway. Yeah,
like
motherwort. Yeah, I like motherwort because to me, it's not benign or else I wouldn't use it. But it's just a. So I don't know if you're like this, but I am. Someone who believes that plants that kind of call to you, like I feel like I have a better relationship with motherwort than I would like, I don't know, something else that would be in that category. Or like, you know, like I have a friend that she likes to use lots of like tropical herbal medicines, mm-hmm. and I tend to use. I don't know if it's like because of my ancestry or what, but I tend to use like this region of plants, mm-hmm. like this plants that are indigenous to this type of area are usually what speak to me the most. And I feel like I'm more successful, like those plants. I almost feel weird saying this. I don't know why, but I feel like they are my allies, like truly, like these certain, you know, herbs are my allies, and maybe other herbs wouldn't work for me as well. So I feel like motherwort is like one of my buddies, my plant mm-hmm. friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like to work with motherwort, cause it's, you know, as far as like cramping and all mm-hmm. of that, it can help, mm-hmm. but also the emotional balance.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel like has been definitely helpful for me. And then there's the part of that that's like, well, are my clients, you know, friends of these plants, which is always something to sort of ask. Like, I like to ask if they have herbal friends that they tend to use. And then mm-hmm. I would definitely adjust, encourage them to use what speaks to them, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely, anyway. You know, the Wapio talks a lot about that in her.
Oh, does she?
Course. Yeah. I mean, she does every single one of her units in her quantum midwifery and birthkeeping school has a homeopathy element. And she talks about herbs as well, because that's where homeopathy comes from, is it's the energy of whatever plant or whatever whatever came from. So
is that homeopathy?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. Yeah,
it's really cool.
I don't do homeopathy very much, so I'm like, I feel like I'm definitely a noob when it comes to that.
I mean, there's a lot of it, and I'm not an expert on it, but you know, it's under the premise that like cures like. So the best example, mm-hmm. that's, you know, quinine for malaria causes malarial symptoms, but it also cures mm-hmm. it, but it makes you feel like you have malaria. So that was one of the things that Hahnemann, who kind of spearheaded homeopathy, that was how he kind of figured out that it worked, is, you know, he was taking, it's comes from a tree, like I can't remember the name of the tree, but it's, he was taking that plant and it was giving him symptoms of malaria, but it was also like, it's also what they use to cure malaria. So it was kind of that whole premise of like, oh, this thing that creates these symptoms is also the cure, you know?
Interesting. So, yeah.
It's like anti-venom is made from the venom of rattlesnake. But if you use it to save people from a rattlesnake bite.
Yeah.
So it's that true. Same kind of thing.
Interesting.
But a lot of these, you know, homeopathy remedies like semicifugia is, I'm going to probably say it wrong. I think semicifugia is blue cohosh, black cohosh, maybe.
Blue and black together.
No, what there's a I'm just going to misquote everything today, apparently.
It's okay.
But semicifugia is one of the cohoshes. And then there's another one, and I can't remember the name of it right now because I am just, that's the kind of day I'm having. But they come from the cohoshes. Those homeopathic remedies come from the cohoshes. Mm. And it's just a distillation of, it's just further and further. Like the more that you, it's not called distilling, it's called succussing. And they basically like shake it gently. And they have machines that do this now, but you do it a certain number of times. And the more that you do it, the more powerful the energy that comes from that becomes. And so eventually you're just left with a distillation that's pure energy.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. And I'm not in any way an expert on it, but it's something that she teaches because she, Wapio, has taken a lot of homeopathy courses. And so she is somebody that's, you know, very well versed in it.
Nice.
But it is like that energetic, you know, what works for certain people. And like that's in homeopathy as well. People have different constitutions based on that. And it has to do with their energy. Those are valid questions to ask somebody when you're giving them something like that, I think, is what do you use? What works for you?
Yeah.
I think that's a totally valid question that, you know, everyone should be asking. Yeah. We used to ask it of people in the hospital, like if they've come in with migraines or something like that, like, what do you usually do for this? Or what usually works for this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was about to say is like, it's funny. There's so many different like medications for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not an unfamiliar concept that there would be something that might work for you that won't work for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it's a concept that's most often talked, in my experience, most often talked within like natural health circles,
mm-hmm.
much more than clinical, what is the word? Not homeopathic, like not osteopathic, allopathic. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and it's definitely something that I don't carry homeopathics with me currently because I don't feel like I have the appropriate knowledge to be giving them to people.
Same.
I have clients that use them. I have clients that use them and are comfortable with them. I have texts because when I took Wapio's course, I, you know, have the books from that. And I, it's definitely something that I would like to go back and revisit. You know, I have access still to that as, you know, part of being a student of hers. You know, I have access to that material. And then we have a course at Midwifery Wisdom that's homeopathy for childbirth, and it's taught by a homeopath from Denmark. Mm. And so I'm like, it's something that I would like to get into more because I feel like it's just another tool like herbs that you can take with you and just have to offer, you know? So it's, for me, it's interesting. For somebody else, they might be like, yeah, I'm not really into that, but that's something that I would like to have and be able to offer to people. But I feel like I'd need to know a lot more about it before I would do it. So that's kind of one of the things that maybe this winter when I'm hibernating, I'll try to focus on that a little bit more. But I do carry herbs. I carry a scale and a sling. I carry my blood pressure cuff. I carry a fetoscope, a Doppler, a stethoscope. Most of these things I don't have to use. You know, I use the stethoscope after the baby's born so I can hear what their lungs sound like. And they usually sound like, you know, a washing machine initially, which is kind of normal. but I very rarely, I don't think I've ever used my blood pressure cuff. Because I can, they can be very obtrusive, and I've never felt like I'm like, I really need to know what this person's blood pressure is. I carry a Rebozo. I took Gina Kirby's Rebozo training and I loved it. So I carry that. I carry, what else do I have in there? Of course, I can't remember all of them now, but, yeah, those are kind of the big things that I can think of. But again, I don't feel like I have to use them very often. I feel like that's like any birth worker probably will say, like, I have this bag full of stuff and half the stuff I never even use or more. So we just lug these heavy bags around full of things that we're like, I've never used that. Why do I carry it? Oh, I have a measuring tape in there.
Like a Milwaukee one, you just like all the way yeah. out in metal, and no, like you, yeah, soft. And then you snap it back tape. When you're done. Yes.
Let me measure you. I have the little sewing tape. I have a due date wheel, just because, you know, it kind of gets you close. But oh, I always like to know, you know, what people's cycles are like, because I think we all know that the 28-day cycle is not something that everyone has anymore, but it's a nice, mm-hmm. it gets you close. And then you can kind of adjust as you talk to people about like when they actually probably will have their baby, which none of us know that. So it's a good way to guess. Mm-hmm. What else do I carry? Gloves. I have a box of gloves in there. Yeah, I can't think. What about you?
Well, we're pretty much one for one. basically, almost everything that you've said are things that I have.
It's in my room. I could go get it, but I don't. I'm like, yeah. No.
Yeah, I have. Other than what you said, because I think literally everything you said, I have. For the herbs, I have motherwort, blue cohosh, lady's mantle.
That's the other one I have. Thank you.
yeah. And I'm pretty sure I have shepherd's purse also.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that I have that I cannot think of right now. But I, you know, honestly, I pretty much just bring, I think I just had motherwort, blue cohosh, and that other one that I can't think of right now.
Lady's mantle, or the other one that you said that you can't remember?
No, yeah, the other one that I can't think of right now, unless it is lady's mantle. Maybe it's just those three. And the other stuff kind of stayed back. Just like I don't always have everything. I don't always have all of the tinctures with me, but I have them. And then, yeah, one for one with basically everything. I have cord cutters.
Mm-hmm.
I have hemostats. I have suturing stuff. Because I am trained in that. And hopefully, please God, I don't ever have to use them. Just because, you know, like, not that that would be the end of the world. It's just like, I most likely will not have, like, painkiller with me when I've...
Right. Lidocaine, so. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah, so and I have tried, you know, just as an aside, I've tried to find backwoods version, like you know, something similar to lidocaine, that's like bushcraft or, you know, something. I can't find anything that's actually gonna like work so far. There might be something, and if somebody's listening to this and you've got something, like, you know of something, please email me. Cause some of the different bushcraft and like herbal, like poultices or whatever that people have said, or like you can make an herbal spray, like with clove. It's just not something that would necessarily work for, like, it's not going to be a pleasant idea for the nether regions, you know, for a vulva, like,
mm-hmm.
So it would be something that maybe would work on like your arm or something right. like that, you know? So it's like, dang it. So anyway, but yeah, I'm trained in that. So I have the tools and, I have gloves for that purpose also to check for tears and stuff like that. Cause I feel like if I'm literally poking around, I'd rather like, I would like some barrier there just in case. But as far as like actually
I do have
working
cord clamp cutters, because I've had a lot of clients who have had their babies in the hospital who then come home and it's like, some of them are little, but sometimes they'll put these like giant cord clamps on these babies and then they're having a really hard time with diapering and things like that. And like, can you just cut this off? And so my husband and I have had many an incident where we've tried to get them off with like, you know, different tools that the dad has. And I'm like, I just need to buy a cord clamp cutter so we can cut this stupid thing off and not have to use all these crazy tools that we found in someone's house. So I have that.
I do have cord clamps too. Just a plastic throwaway, that you can break those off with a
safety pin.
Yes. Thank you.
Usually that works, but we had one that was like humongous and was really, really hard to get open, but we managed.
Yeah. But we do, you know, there's cord burning and there's lotus births and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's not always, it's just there. It's there. It's wanted. What else do I have? I have some emergency. Okay. So this is definitely, so I have some stuff in my bag. That's definitely, like emergency rural, you know, just kind of general field medicine stuff. So I have like emergency matches, emergency flint type stuff.
So that's more just like if I need to, you know, use this in any situation where I'm not anywhere
blanket, like shock blanket, or not a shock blanket, sorry, the like aluminum looking ones.
The warming blanket?
Yes, warming blanket. Thank you. What else do I have? I want to get a shock garment. This is definitely more birth related or is birth related for, have you heard of that?
Like mask pants?
No, a shock garment, like it's a full body thing. It's kind of like it's a full body sort of suit, and it kind of puts pressure on the limbs to help keep blood in the core, you know, in your keep blood closer to your heart, basically. And it's for hemorrhage, for severe hemorrhage.
I know my husband used those in the field, like in emergency medicine. They call them mast pants. And they put them on like the lower, they're good for like stabilizing a pelvic fracture, which is, I think, when they use them the most commonly, because they are designed for putting pressure. I think that he was saying though, they don't use it for hemorrhage typically because the pressure, he says he feels like it just causes you to bleed more quickly, like when you're putting pressure on, but I don't know, like you're pushing it out faster. But I might be misquoting him because that's my thing. I'm doing that today. I'm just going to misquote everybody.
Thing today.
Forget words and I'm going to misquote stuff. But they do use, like, I know they have that, like the lower extremities. It's called mast pants, and they use those in the field for that type of stuff.
I'm trying to remember what country it is. It's like Uganda or something like that. But whoever created this shock garment thing, I don't know if they invented it in whatever that country is that I'm missing, or if this is just where it was more heavily used and has saved a lot of lives. But it's something that they use there. It's somewhere like Uganda, maybe Haiti, or
someplace where they're probably far away from any place that has
somewhere that's like does not have a lot
treatment.
Of like immediate treatment, exactly. Like their clinic is very far away from the big city that has the full hospital or something like that. Maybe it was Ethiopia. I don't remember. Now it's gonna annoy me. I'm gonna want to find out. But anyway, yeah. So Yeah. And it apparently women, like if there's a serious, you know, postpartum hemorrhage or whatever, they can survive for several hours, I think, in these shock garments. And it's just like, if they need to travel a long way or someone needs to travel a long way to get to that, like the blood needs to get to them. Actually, it would probably be they need to get to the blood. But something like that, like basically it's something that they can travel in to get a transfusion or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like that would be a good tool to have in, God forbid, you know, a horrible emergency like that.
Yeah.
We're up in the boonies or something, like up in the hills. And that's that sort of situation where like the ambulance is on its way, but it'll be here in an hour, you know, or and then there's the hour back, you know, to get down there. Or, you know, even if we're throwing somebody in the car and going down ourselves, you know, whatever, it's for that kind of like very dire, crazy situation. Mm-hmm. But, I'd like to have that on hand for those circumstances. I'm trying to think of other, I've been trying to look for more, again, like bushcraft kind of solutions to things, because there are so many people like up in the hills, and a lot of those people are going to the hospital doing like elective inductions and elective C-sections and stuff, because they feel like they're so far out in the boonies that they couldn't, you know, that it would be too dangerous, or the midwives or whoever are not willing to go that far. Yeah. Because
especially in the wintertime again. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's a big yeah, I'll take the winters off, but I'll probably still be hitting snow, like you made that joke earlier. But
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it snowed here like the first week of October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
same.
There is a book that again, we'll talk about WAPIO, that we read in WAPIO's course, and it's called Bush Midwifery. And it's she was the woman who wrote it, was a student of WAPIO's, and before she became a midwife, she was a nurse, a registered nurse, and her name is she goes by Ashwagandha, the Birth Witness, and she wrote this book. That's about
familiar.
It's and it's all about Bush midwifery, about hi Ken,
hi Kitty,
being the name, about what types of emergency skills and equipment and treatment you need to be able to offer or know if you're, you know, attending births that are really, really, really far from any sort of hospital.
I need to get that book, because that sounds like exactly what I've been trying.
I think I have it on my phone. I think you can buy it for, you can get a virtual, you can get the downloadable version, or you can get an actual book. And I think I got the downloadable version, because I wanted to be able to read it on my phone and take it with me. Or it's on my phone.
I think your cat likes me.
She does. She's like, what's up? I'm going to stand right in front of you. She's also trying to avoid the dog. Wrestles with the dog, and I think she's kind of over it at this point. But that's a really good book, if you're interested, because it has a lot of things in it like that. Yes. And it kind of takes the same approach as like, Doctors Without Borders or places like that, where you are in a situation where maybe you're just trying to save like somebody's life, and you have you're very far from any, you know, resources. And at this point, you're really just, you're rendering aid, and you're just trying to save, you know, typically it's trying to save the mother, but you know what I mean? So I think it's that probably would be a good book for you. This is the book that I have. It's for, homeopathy for pregnancy, birth, and then baby's first year. And it's colophyllum. Colophyllum is the other word I couldn't think of. So semicephusia and I'm going to tell you what those are right now. I'm sure
people
are probably dying to know.
They're dying.
What these are.
We haven't even published this yet, and my DMs are blowing up. Yep.
They're like, why don't you remember what it is? So semicephusia. I think that's black cohosh, but I can't remember. And colophyllum is blue cohosh, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Is what the homeopathic remedy is. But yeah, that Bush midwifery book would be a really good one for you, I think.
Yeah, Yeah.
Makes me want to revisit that as well. Cause I was like, oh yeah, I have a book for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling, I want to learn all the things so that I can be not, I mean, I, so that I can be self-sustainable in these wild mm-hmm. lands, you know, mm-hmm. the other unfortunate thing about being independent like this is, that all the licensed midwives, like, even if they wanted to, can't really support me. And so it's a matter of, I mean, there's a growing little community of birth workers that are training themselves in a variety of, you know, clinical things, depending, you know, whether they're gonna kind of liken themselves to a midwife or not, is I don't know. But there's a growing community of people that will be able to support each other and stuff like that. But as it stands, I would really like to have all these skills so that I don't ever have to use them. But if I did, I have them.
Well, and there's that whole thing about that gatekeeping thing again. It's like, why do I have to call myself something to have a skill? Why can't I just possess a skill? And right, it's like, well, you right. can't. You have to be a nurse, or you have to be a doctor, or you have to be a midwife, you have to be XYZ. And it's like, why can't I just know how to do something?
Yeah. Like if my husband like injures himself working on something or whatever, like he had this big split in his foot or whatever, and I looked at it and I was like, you know, we could do this or we could do that, and I'm just, you know, we'll try this out or whatever. And it healed up and it was fine. Like, oh my God, am I practicing medicine without a license if I gave him, yeah. you know, if I healed this wound? And yeah, same, like nobody would accuse me of that. It wouldn't, like, no one would even care. No one would give a crap mm-hmm. about my husband's split foot, you know, and how we fixed it. Like, but when it comes to some of these other things, suddenly it's like, you know how to suture?
Well, it's interesting because that was like, you know, because I said I carry a Doppler. Well, that was when I had a client's physician report me to the Board of Nursing for managing her birth because she said that I had a Doppler. And what I found funny about that was it's in my nursing scope of practice to use a Doppler in the hospital. It's not like I forget how to use it when I leave the hospital. Yeah. My brain shuts off and I don't know how to use it. So that was kind of, I was like, so I'm allowed to use it in the hospital, but I can't use it at home. Although these people can buy them on the internet and use it.
I was going to say, yeah. I was going to say, they could literally buy them themselves and just radiate the crap out of themselves till the end of time.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people will say things like, you know, well, in the hospital, the doctor is the one that tells you to go get the heart tones. You have to get, you know, the doctor orders, you know, fetal heart tones, you know, whether it's once, like in the emergency room, or if it's like every, you know, 15 minutes or whatever it is, there's protocols for that. So they're like, well, that's under a doctor's supervision. And I always think that's funny because I know of like labor and delivery nurses who have been pregnant, who have had other labor and delivery nurses who are friends with them come to their house and check their cervix and listen to them with a Doppler. And they're no one is batting an eye on the fact about right. the fact that that's happening. And I'm like, same thing. They're not in the right. hospital. They're doing right. it because they know how to do it. Are they wrong? Right. Are they yeah. wrong for doing that? Like, it was just so funny when she reported me for using a Doppler. And I'm like, people can buy these on eBay for like $17, yeah. first of all. And second yeah. of all, I have been trained to use one multiple times. And I have, it's in my scope as a nurse, but suddenly you walk out of the hospital doors and you're supposed to not know how to do things anymore. And like, when people ask me questions about like their blood sugars, like I had one client mm-hmm. was tracking her blood sugar because, you know, they told her she was had gestational diabetes. And so she was checking her blood sugar before she was eating, and then she was checking it afterwards, knowing the guidelines that are set out. Like, there's multiple guidelines, but knowing kind of what the norm is for pregnancy, it was like, I'm not going to be like, I don't know if that's normal or not. I can't answer that question because I'm not allowed to. I do know though. Why would I not exactly. tell you?
Yeah. yeah. Well, just world. Like somebody asks me about herbs and stuff. Well, now I am like technically trained in herbalism, but like I have been working with herbs for many years before I took a program or whatever, like
became official.
Yeah. Like, so like, yeah, just cause I didn't have that, that certification or whatever, again, with all of that, like, yeah, I'm not going to not say chamomile is is safe for babies, and you can use that for tummy issues or skin, you know, as a, mm-hmm. as a bath, a baby bath, tea, and, you know, whatever. It's just like the dumbest thing that we now suddenly have to.
You have to keep things from people.
Yeah. Validate. Yeah. You either have, yeah. Keep things from you if you don't have the certification, and, or validate the crap out of yourself with all of these special certifications and stuff like that before you're allowed to say anything. And still we have people with those certifications and with those licenses that on their podcast, they're like, this is not medical advice. You know, it's like, which I mean, this is one of them. BYA. I literally have that on as a stupid disclaimer. So nobody's right. like,
but that's yeah. the other tool that I bring when I go to births is my brain and my knowledge.
Yeah, I was
and
gonna say your brain.
And I'm like, I don't mm-hmm. feel like you should be able to tell me what I can and cannot tell someone. Like, I'm literally not giving people, like, I'm not like, well, you should take this medication, or you should, like, I give people information just like I did when I worked in the hospital. Like, if you mm-hmm. if someone's blood pressure is 150 over 100, it's like, you know what? I know that that's probably not normal. So maybe we should figure out what the cause of this is. And if we can't get it to improve, then maybe you might want to think about having that checked out by somebody else, you know, or whatever, yeah. whatever yeah. it is. I feel like we work hard to get this knowledge and get these skills. And it's like, as soon as you don't work in the hospital setting or work in these like set areas, you're not allowed to have that information anymore. You have to keep it to yourself. And you can't use it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
yeah,
this is bizarre. When I worked in the hospital, though, it was like, you know, they were like, you're not allowed to diagnose because you're a nurse. So you can't diagnose things. Mm-hmm. Even if you like, you're like, I diagnosed this person with like having a shower curtain rod sticking out of their side. And I'm pretty sure I know what's wrong with them. But I mean, you have doctors in the emergency room all the time, where you'd go in and I would go in and be like, I'm pretty sure that this person in 15 has a kidney stone. Can you please put in for lab work and your analysis? And can we send them to CT? Please. Mm-hmm. And also, can you order them some pain medication? And the doctor's like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So even in the hospital setting, they're like, you're not supposed to diagnose, but the doctors are kind of relying on you to be like, this is what I think is going on. Can you possibly do this? That's the whole point of like SBAR communication. Here's what I think is going on. Here's what I would like for you to do. That whole thing about, you know, taking, being able to take knowledge and skill with you somewhere and not having to sit there and stare at someone and having them asking you questions and knowing the answer and not being able to tell them because you're not allowed to tell. The whole thing doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Exactly. So what do you feel are like, what are birth supplies that you like to see in rural birth situations, or you like do you have a list that you offer people of like, hey, here's my like suggested supplies or whatever?
I have a list that I do send to my clients, and a lot of times it'll have like, a lot of times it has books on it and things like that. Like, I'm like, if you like to use herbs, you should get, you know, Susan Weed's book, you know, herbal for the wise woman's
childbearing
year. I think that's a great book. And if you want to use herbs during your pregnancy or in labor, you should get this book. Or like, if they're interested in homeopathy and they like to use homeopathy, I'm like, you should get, I have a link to the kit that, that they can get for, that has the childbirth specific homeopathics, but it's like a pre-made kit where I recommend that they get this book so that they can determine what maybe they want to use based on their preference, what works for them. But I always tell people, like, if you are not familiar with this, you know, I would not recommend that you just start doing it right now. But if it's somebody who has used them non-pregnant, then I'm like, this is a good resource for you now that you're pregnant if you want to use homeopathics, because they are safe for pregnancy, they're safe for babies. I have links to, like, I'll tell them, like, if you're gonna have somebody other than, you know, yourself or your husband touch your baby, then maybe you want to have gloves, you know, at home. You want something to put the placenta in. It doesn't have to be anything special unless you want it to be, you know, I tell them to get like either a metal bowl. I'm like, it can be like a giant plastic ice cream container. It really doesn't matter. I usually will recommend that they either get like Chucks pads, or even if they don't want to do something like that, that's, you know, if they're more trying to be more environmentally cautious, I'm like, if you have old towels that you don't care about, you know, those are good to have around. You know, I give them information about cord clamps and things like that. Cause a lot of times they'll want to buy all their supplies. So I'm like, if you want to use cord clamps, you can. I'm like, you can use string, you know, none of these things are required, you know,
right.
I always tell people, I'm like, for a home birth, you don't really need a lot of stuff. You know, right. It's more like a preference thing. Like what would you like to have around? Like, what's, if your husband's going to catch your baby and he doesn't care about getting, you know, fluids all over him, then you probably don't need gloves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. The biggest thing is really just like something to cut the cord with and something to put the placenta in.
Yeah. Yeah, basically something to catch mess if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something like to put the placenta in. And yeah, and then a way to sever the cord if you
are even if you're not going to do a lotus birth. Yeah,
but even a lotus birth, there's a small amount of supplies. Like people need to have salt
and a container, like a bag to put the placenta in. And
at least salt, definitely a container. People do herbs and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's nice, but I think probably the bare minimum is salt.
You're basically curing
it. Yeah. Yeah. There was some, as an aside, there was, I don't know why this woman pops up in my Instagram every once in a while. She always annoys me. It's like literally every time she pops up, the topic is like, oh, that might be interesting. And I listen and I'm like, oh, you are very annoying. And it was this lady, crapping all over, lotus birth. And like saying that there was somebody she knew in the hospital, and there was a client or somebody that came in, or a patient that came in. Of course, they're not clients when they're in the hospital, but there was a patient who came in and she insisted on a lotus birth, and wouldn't you know it, she ended up having a fever later on, and she was basically saying that it was because of the lotus birth. And I looked in her comments, which I never should have done. And all these people were just like, yeah, why would you want a dead chunk of meat hanging off of your body? This, you know, gross, whatever. And I'm just like, you all are annoying.
Oh my gosh. Well, and a lot of that, you know, I think people should be able to do it regardless, but a lot of that is cultural too. So it's,
well, the funny thing is so many of these people, and even the person who created this post was saying like this new fad to do a lotus birth, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh my gosh, this new fad? You mean this ancient practice, this ancient cultural practice of lotus birth? Okay.
But way to alienate a whole bunch of people by saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. But I don't know. What do you like to tell your clients to have around?
I mean, especially with my experiences with my free births, like I realized how little we actually need. Chucks, pads, towels, placenta,
receptacle,
decision for on the placenta, and then the tools you might need. So either a candle, or some salt, or
scissors.
Yeah, or scissors and string or something. Something like that. I actually prefer the stringy type stuff too, because it's easier to deal with in a diaper.
In their diaper and clothes.
Yeah.
I do always tell my clients, I'm like, you need to have things around that are individual to you, and like what things make you feel calm or what things help you cope. So I always tell them to think about like, what are the things that are like what are your go-to solutions when you're stressed or in pain or upset or any of those things in your regular everyday life?
Right.
Think about those things and consider having those around, because it's likely that those will be helpful for you in labor. Sometimes women will go into labor and suddenly the thing that they loved so much when they were pregnant or not pregnant, but not in labor, you know what I mean? Like suddenly that thing that they loved is like the thing that they do not want around. And it suddenly annoys them. I'm like, there's always the potential that your husband giving you a back rub was relaxing when you were not in labor, and now you don't want him to touch you. That's totally fine. But a lot of times you'll gravitate towards those things that you find to be helpful when you're in stressful situations in your life otherwise. So that kind of is more individual to them. Like those are the kinds of things that you want to do to prepare at home, other than having like a pool if you want a pool, and having a birth ball if you want a birth ball, or I have one of those. But like those types of things, that's the kind of preparation when I talk to them about birth planning for home birth, because you're not really creating a birth plan that says like, I don't want you to give my baby vitamin K, you know, or I don't want to give my baby hepatitis B, or any of those things. It's more coming up with like, these are the things that I would like to have at my birth. Like, I do want my husband to sit, to be in the pool, or I do want my partner to catch my baby, or I want to catch my own baby, or I want the lights off, or I want to be in this. Those are the types of things that I really go into birth, home birth planning for me is more like, what would you like to do? And what would you like not to do, or like us not to do?
Right. Yeah. Oh, and I forgot another piece is I always suggest, and I always have a heater, like a little, mm-hmm. And a quiet one. Like, so funny thing. We had, I think, a heat dish maybe for my first or maybe second, I don't remember, but we had a heat dish, and, that's like stovetop heat. And mm-hmm. I found that I didn't like that because I felt like I was sitting under a ray of the sun, mm-hmm. like really intense. It was intense in this like concentrated area. Yeah. I did like it when I was sitting on the toilet. Like if I was laboring on the toilet, I liked it being a little bit far away, pointed at me. That felt, that was nice, which I think maybe because I'm touching the cold toilet, mm-hmm. it was, you know, different. But if I was just kind of like hanging out laboring, I liked this other little heater that was like, it's kind of cylindrical. I don't know why I said that so weird. And it has like, it's got a really quiet fan, so it's a little bit of like white noise, and it's just real subtle, and it just blows warm air, like mm-hmm. it's not like heat, you know, mm-hmm. attacking me. It's just like this warmth. And
yeah, like a fan, because you know sometimes you want that movement of the air, like mm-hmm. in your face. Sometimes that's to have.
Having a summer birth, I didn't. My last birth was in the middle of summer, and I didn't use my heater because I didn't need it. And I did like having the window open for a little bit. For that reason, the little bit of the airflow,
like air movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the stuffiness did get old after a while, so that's a good note for sure.
But I definitely don't think that there's like a lot of things like some people they need to have. I mean, if people want to buy, you can go on, you know, In His Hands Birth Supply or Cascade Health or any mm-hmm. of those places. You can find like a home birth kit that has, you know, cord clamps, and it has a couple of chucks, and it has a couple pairs of gloves and all that. But I feel like I bring a lot of stuff because that's the stuff that I use. So I would rather just bring most of, and I think that's how most people are, you know. A lot of midwives will have like kits that they create that they're like, you need to buy this, and it has the stuff that they like in it, and then mm-hmm. that you can order it. But I think a lot of midwives are just they're restocking their supplies, and they're bringing it with them, and because it has all the stuff in it that you're used to using.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of stuff for my clients, because I have all the stuff that I like to use.
Yeah. As far as like those tools and stuff, I forgot to mention, I have a catheter and an enema, an enema bag or whatever, mm-hmm. Like the tools for that. And no, I'm not doing a standard enema of hot milk or whatever, call the midwife.
The milk and molasses. We used to do that.
High, hot, and a hell of a lot or whatever their little
thing
was.
That's true.
Yeah.
True. But, it works really well.
I love that show. But I have an enema, kit or whatever. For emergency fluids, that's what I would use that for. And a catheter, just for anybody listening, sometimes bladders can get in the way if they're full, and they things can get pinched off and stuff, certain different parts of the descent and stuff like that, and it can cause, or it can prevent descent of the baby because the bladder's too full and it's basically this big balloon right in the way. Or and that's partly why people are, you know, like, make sure you're peeing and all of that stuff. So anyway, mm-hmm. that can cause a problem or a hold up, and having a catheter on hand. I've just heard too many stories where like well, this was happening, and we figured out, oh yes, this is what's going on, and she wasn't able to pee, and so we just, you know, she was okay with the catheter and just did that and emptied her bladder, and ta-da, the baby shot out, you know, or whatever. So
that bladder,
yeah, and I feel, and the in catheters, they're not comfortable, but
neither is a full bladder that has like 1,000 cc's of urine in it.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's not comfortable either.
Yeah, or having a baby that won't descend because you got a full bladder, and so yeah, that just seems like an easy solution. like it's not like an episiotomy or something like that where it's like causing long-term, you know, wounding or whatever. So I wouldn't say, just for clarity, I wouldn't say it causes wounding at all. Like the catheter or the enemas situation. Just want to be clear. Yeah. So but there was something you said that made me think of that, but yeah, like birth supplies can be so minimal. And I feel like, especially in rural situations, it doesn't really change. There's not really much different that I can think of that I would do. There's not anything that I would do much different if I was like in the middle of a city, as far from what I
people
can think
of. People are just used anyway. To seeing, you know, the hospital setting and having all of these things just everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when they do, especially if they've had a birth in the hospital or even just been to the hospital, when they start planning home births, they think, I'm going to have to get a lot of stuff. You don't have to get a lot of stuff.
yeah, you don't.
Thanks for joining me here. Remember to subscribe, write a review, and check out the show notes for other ways to connect. Nothing on this podcast is medical or legal advice. By engaging with this content, you agree to take full responsibility for your own experiences. Everything in this podcast is property of Prudence Ministries, a private healing association.